Blog Talk Radio.
Archangels, ghosts, and Bigfoot, oh my. It's just another night for Supernatural Girls. Real stories, real answers to life's biggest supernatural mysteries. And now for another exciting interview with paranormal experts from this world and others. Here are your supernatural hosts, Patricia Baker and Becky Andreasen. Supernatural Girls.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Supernatural Girls. I am your host, Patricia Baker, and I'm hearing an echo.
Oh,
Becky.
No.
Welcome to the show, Becky, but I'm going to have to ask just you to hang up and call back in. Let's see if we can get rid of this echo.
Okay, will do.
All righty. Everybody else stay on the line, but Becky, if you could call back in, let's see if we can get rid of this.
Okay, be right back.
All right. Stay tuned, everybody. Just so you know, we've been having an echo on the board, and we've done a lot of research with the help of Blog Talk, and they were able to trace it to some type of a problem with Becky's phone line. So anyway, she's been in touch with her phone company, and apparently they haven't fixed it yet. So she's just going to call back in. We're going to see if we can get rid of the echo just by doing that, because we have a fabulous show for you tonight. This is incredible information coming from a scholar and author, Avery Morrow. We're going to be bringing him on in just a few minutes. And let me get Becky back in live on the air. Let's see if, hi, Becky.
Hello, any echo?
No echo that I can hear.
Oh, geez. So my little trigger line is the culprit, huh?
Yeah, there's no
somebody
question now.
Something. Yep, somebody has something on the line.
Yeah,
we'll
so it's time to call
out
that phone company and put your foot down and get it fixed. But
I'm
anyways, everything sounds fine now, so this
good.
Is good. So how are you tonight?
Oh, I'm great. We had beautiful weather here today. I love it. I am so ready for spring. And is it... Let's see, tomorrow night we go ahead an hour?
It's tonight. Tonight's the big
tonight?
Night.
Oh,
yes.
Geez, it's too early. I want it to be tomorrow. Oh, my gosh.
I guess
well,
they want to
I
give everybody
wait.
A day to kind of get situated and not be late for work, so it is tonight.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it just brings spring quicker to us, 1 hour quicker.
Yes, that's right. And we're going to have longer days, more daylight, supposedly. I love it, although this whole daylight savings time, I don't even know why we do it. But I'm happy. Spring's around the corner. Even for us, it was a warm day up here in the frigid north. So I'm just thrilled to see birds and hear some singing birds. You know, they're not all freezing to death out there. So that's a good sign, very good sign.
Yeah.
So I want to encourage everybody, please go to supernaturalgirls.com, that's with a Z, and sign up for our newsletter so that you can find out about all the upcoming shows, giveaways, special offers, all kinds of great things that we have, and also the news for Power Preppers. And we're going to be having some interesting shows coming up on ham radios and how to use them. All kinds of things like that. Who knows? We may need a ham radio someday. I mean, look at this. We can't even get a clear phone line, Becky, and you're only in Virginia. So maybe a ham radio is the solution.
Yes. Boy, I'm not going to miss that show.
No, I know.
I want to hear every word.
Really. Oh, goodness me. Well, anyways, I do have a little bit of supernatural news, but, you know, here's the thing. I wanted to get something that's in line with what we're talking about tonight, because we don't usually get into politics much, but certainly this book by Avery Morrow, The Sacred Science of Ancient Japan, it does address the fact that there's a lot of monkey business going on here with the suppression of records and information to the public.
That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. We're all kind of tired of it. But I found something. Really, I'm sick of it. But I found something today where it says that the FBI has opened files, get a load of this one, proving that Hitler did not kill himself in his bunker with Eva Braun, but they did go to Argentina.
My goodness.
Yes, and you can go to FBI.gov. I haven't done it yet, so I can't say for certain that this is true, but apparently people have gone to FBI.gov, and there are newly declassified FBI government documents proving that the government knew Hitler was alive and well and living in the Andes Mountains long after World War II. So we're going to have to follow up on this and take a look because, you know, there's been rumors and all of this, but apparently there was a letter to the Bureau of Investigation in August of 1945, and an informant agreed to exchange information for political asylum. And the informant told them that not only did he know that Hitler was in Argentina, he was one of the confirmed four men who had met the German submarine that carried him and landed on the Argentinian coast with Hitler and Eva Braun. I guess Eva Braun was on a second one, but Hitler was on the first one. So the Argentinian government not only welcomed the former German dictator, but also aided in his hiding. And the informant went on. Yeah, this is something else, I'm telling you what.
Geez.
They went on to give a detailed directions to the villages that Hitler and his party passed through and credible physical details concerning Hitler. So, for obvious reasons, the informant was never named in the FBI papers, but he was credible enough to be believed by some agents. So, there you have it.
Now, that's huge.
It is huge. Oh. It's huge. And again, there's been rumors for years about this, but I don't know. I'm going to have to take a look at these documents for myself before I'm going to say too much more about it, but I wouldn't be surprised. Wouldn't be surprised at all if this was the case.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
What else is out there that, you know, has been hidden from everybody? It's like there's more things that are hidden from us than a truth.
Well, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. And that, I know, is what Avery's going to be talking to us about. So now, Avery Morrow is a very interesting man. He has done a lot of research on the basis of Asian folk traditions and has been published in several academic journals. His interest in parahistory brought him to Japan, where for 3 years he researched various documents, taught English, visited sacred sites, and worked as a translator and assistant to renowned Shintoist, I hope I don't butcher the name too badly, Shinichi Nakaya. So, here is our guest for the evening, Avery Morrow. Welcome to Supernatural Girls.
Good evening. It's good to be here.
Well, thank you for
Wonderful.
Joining us. This is a terrific book. Becky and I have been spellbound with it here. But tell us, how in the world did you get involved with this?
That's a good question. It was a few years ago now. I was really interested in, you know, what was the oldest thing I could learn about Japan? How did that whole Japanese civilization get started? And the normal story, as I put in the first few chapters of the book, is are these early history texts that talk about mythology. They talk about early emperors and stuff like that. But when I was doing that research, I discovered there was someone who was saying, no, there's earlier books than that. And, you know, nobody believes us, but you should look into it yourself, and you'll find out that there's this whole, like, world of ultra-ancient history. And it just got me fascinated, and that's what started me down the track to this.
Now, did you find out about this when you were living in Japan, or did you know about this ahead of time here in the United States?
Yeah, I was studying religion at a college in Minnesota, and that's when I first found out about it, but there was virtually nothing written about it in English at that time. So when I came to Japan, I just started pulling books off the shelves and, you know, trying to figure things out for myself, and my book is the result of that.
Now, are you of Japanese heritage yourself? Is that a part of your lineage?
No, I've been interested in Japanese culture for a while. I lived in a monastery in Kyoto for several years, and I was, you know, getting interested in Japanese religion. I studied Buddhism, and right now I'm studying Japan's other major traditions. But there's not enough written about this topic, about, you know, the origins of Japanese history. And so that's really what got me started there.
That's fascinating. So you are obviously are fluent in Japanese.
Well, I have a, you know, conversational level. What gets me most excited is reading things that nobody knows about, and that's really interesting to me. So that's my best skill in Japanese.
I see. Well, this is a great book. I mean, Becky, you and I have been talking about it all week. It has a rich, rich history that you're bringing forward that apparently was banned, and people were more than actively discouraged from talking about this and writing about this. So why don't you start wherever you'd like to start and talking about how this came to be revealed to you and the important points about this.
Yeah, that is a really fascinating topic, ancient Japanese history. Because up until recently, you know, the origin of the country was tied up with, what was the good form of government and stuff like that. So for someone to bring out their own text, which they had been, you know, storing away in their family for generations, and say, this is the actual history, you know, that basically means the authorities are lying to you. And so that was a very controversial thing to say back in the day, and so some of these texts were actually suppressed. But yeah, it all begins with these people who have in Japan, what we call as Shinto shrines, they often have ancient documents that are just stored in like the back room. And those documents, usually they belong to the household. Usually they're records of things related to the local area or the shrine or the divinities that are in the shrine. But in these few special cases that I've put in my book, they're actually talking about what ancient Japan was like. And so I tried to cover four different texts. The documents are called Kujiki, Hotsunotsutai, the Takenouchi documents, and Katakumuna documents. And they all have this, you know, unique and really interesting perspective on what it was like to live in ancient Japan.
Well, one of the things I noticed was in the dictums of how to rule, you know, like things that you should do as a ruler. And they all made so much sense. I mean, it was, even back then, there was a lot about just don't take bribes. And simple things like that were recorded in some of these ancient documents that you translated. Certainly our politicians today could learn a lot by following what was in these documents. I mean, they were all like commandments in some ways, weren't they?
Yeah, you could say that they're commandments, but it's more like, you know, they have to speak to something within you. This is the right way for officials to behave. If everyone could just keep that in mind, you know, in Japan, for example, they have this vertical society. There's a superior-inferior relationship. But what that means is that, like, your boss at the office know that his responsibility is to take care of you, right? And this is something that comes up in these documents, is like, this is the correct way to rule the government. But it's not the same as having like strictly laid out commandments, right? Like rules that say you must do this, you can't do that. And I think that speaks to it, you know, like it's like speaking to the human soul, and instead of just trying to make, like, you know, rigorous structure for our society.
Yeah, absolutely. I certainly agree with what you just said. I mean, I have this list in front of me. One of them, take responsibility for your own affairs and do not interfere with the duties of others. Come to work early, work until late to ensure that all matters are dealt with. I mean, it just, like I said, a lot of this is common sense. It's fascinating to me that this was written so many years ago. I mean, this is written when, this one?
Yeah, what you're looking at is a real text. Like, it's a confirmed, authentic text that was written around, like, 700 A.D.
That's
a very
amazing.
Long time ago, people
That's
came
amazing.
Up with these ideas.
And,
yeah,
and it's so contemporary. I mean, again, all of these things are like, yeah, this makes sense, that makes sense. Do not envy those whose wisdom and genius exceeds yours, but honor them.
Right. It's something that you can actually see in a Japanese office. Like, when I was working there for 3 years, which is something I was doing up until last year, I was, like, comparing it to this ancient document, and I'm like, wow, they've really been following these ideas all these years. Like, this is how their society functions. It's really fascinating.
It is. And again, that this was written, again, so many years ago, and yet it is so appropriate today. And unfortunately, so many who lead don't follow any of these things. Not one.
That's true.
It's sad, we can laugh about it.
Yes.
In America today, we have so many competing, like, ideologies, but we don't have any, like, overarching sense of, like, this is the, you know, one thing we're all pursuing. And some of these documents talk about this, you know, this universal sense of, like, a harmoniously run country. And it's talking about the deep past. Like, this is, you know, things were in order back then. It's something we can think about and maybe apply to our lives today.
Well,
it's true. Which were the oldest?
Yeah.
Yes, it does. The documents, out of all those that you were speaking of in your book, the four, which of them was the oldest document?
Oh, that's a good question, because we don't actually know how old these are. The one that you were, the chapter that you're looking at, that one, they said it's from around 600 A.D., and there's another one from 100 A.D., but the last two, they're, like, you know, indeterminately ancient is what their proponents say they are. Like, you know, they come from, like, such a point in the deep past. Like, maybe they're an oral tradition, or, you know, maybe they were discovered by some other means of communication, you know, like some sort of, like, spiritual thing going on that caused people to produce these texts. But yeah, the Takenouchi documents in particular, they have this, you know, grand idea of an ancient universe, like, thousands or millions of years ago, ruled, you know, the world was ruled by this, like, single emperor who could create harmony in all the areas of the world. So there's definitely a huge variety of, you know, legends and stories being told here.
And they spoke of the five races, right?
Sorry?
The five different races, which also are in other texts.
Right. It's really fascinating because, you know, it's not something you can find in a history book, but in America around that time, we had Edgar Cayce also saying, yeah, millions of years in the past, around the time of Atlantis, there were these five races who were living together on the same planet. And that's something really different. But then you can see that in these Japanese documents too. It's like they're telling a similar story.
Yeah, amazing.
And
wow.
the similar stories also go with the mythology of this. You know, talking about the male aspect, the female aspect. I mean, again, it has its own mythology that's not so dissimilar from Egyptian mythology or even Indian. So. You kind of tied it all together and put Japan in, ancient Japan in with these other cultures from our long ago past.
Yeah, absolutely. And At first when I was reading through these documents, I didn't have anything in my own experience to look back on and say, you know, what is this talking about? But then I started to read other records, ancient Egyptian, ancient Greek, ancient Indian, and I realized there are all sorts of parallels with these documents. I just had no idea. And that really made me think there must be something going on here. I think Japan really had a role in this, you know, in this tradition being passed down from ancient times.
Absolutely. And now, why the big secrecy around these documents? You would hope that everybody in Japan would embrace this information and want it to be out in the public, but this has, in fact, a history of being suppressed.
Yeah, I think for one thing, people don't really realize the value of these documents these days. They think, like, you know, it came from some family, some shrine produced these, and we don't really know where they come from. But if you really look into it for yourself, you'll see there's all sorts of, you know, fascinating parallels here. Like teachings that are familiar for Japanese people, but maybe they aren't enunciated in the way that we'd like to hear it. And when you look through this, it gives you all sorts of ideas. And the other thing is, yeah, like because Japan has this rigorous idea of, like, this is the public thing, everything else is private, it means that the government determined what, you know, what history is, what the official history is. And these days you have the universities, the professors will say the same thing. Like, here's our official historical documents, here's our records. The other stuff, they're simply not interested in it at all. Like, but they I don't think they see that there's really something there that we can all learn from.
So there's this traditional view the universities, et cetera, take. But is it more than that? I mean, is it that if this information got out in its entirety, that it would change people's attitudes in a way that the Japanese government would not be happy with?
Right. That, you know, when you get people with that, you know, a radical opinion in Japan, like, you have to read this, you have to come look at this, that might make the people in charge kind of uncomfortable. Like, what if you read through this document, people's whole attitudes might be changed, their worldviews might change. So yeah, they are powerful in that way. Yeah,
because it seemed like when these first kind of came to light many years ago, even then they were suppressed. Could you tell us a little bit more about that and what happened when people tried to bring these things out?
Yeah, I think a very interesting case was just recently, like in the 1920s when the Takenouchi documents came out, you had a bunch of people, they were often like very, very smart people. Some of them were, you know, in the military and government, they were all studying them, and this made people really nervous. Like, this is not our official history. This is a document that's claiming to be more official, more authentic. And so, you know, the newspapers had a campaign denouncing it. The government brought out people and said, no, these are all forgeries, and they got a confession out of the person who produced them, and he said, I wrote those. And it's just, it is something that got people very concerned back then. And so how it ended up was when they confiscated a lot of the documents and kept them in the courthouse, and that was then, you know, burned to the ground during the war. So that means we're missing a lot of what we could have known about the Takenouchi documents from that time. So yeah, it shows that it really is a powerful thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's something in this. And what do you think it is? I mean, what do you think is in these documents? Now, you've done four of them, and you know there's more, but what is the big deal? I mean, why are they so worried about this?
Yeah, I think it's about there are in the two official histories, the Kojiki and the Nihonshoki, there are so many unanswered questions. Like, who were these kami? Were they people? Were they gods? What sort of lives did they live? How does this link into the country that we're living in today? And when you have unanswered questions like that, it makes things a little unstable. But these documents provide an answer that, you know, in ancient times, Japan had a civilization which was, you know, comparable with other ancient civilizations around the world, and that it had a traditional teaching which was similar to, you know, the other secret teachings, the initiatory lineages around the world, and that, you know, Japan has the same origin with other countries. And I think that, it's something that people might practice in Japan today. They might, you know, they respect ancient rituals and stuff like that, but they might not know the deeper symbolism and the truths behind it, and that's what these documents provide.
Well, so what is it that every time there's a document that links human beings to the god element, is that what makes them nervous?
Oh, yeah, that could be, because I didn't think about that, but in many of these documents, you do see that the kami, the divinities, are interacting with people regularly. And sometimes they actually are people. They're just, like, you know, particularly long-lived or virtuous people, or they have, like, a pure soul that provides an example for other people. And it says that, you know, the gods are basically like us in that way, you know, and we can imitate them and become like them. So that definitely is something you could get from these.
Yes, because,
wow.
Again, I'm just trying to wrap my mind around why they got so incredibly nervous that they would confiscate documents and extract confessions and, you know, go to such lengths, basically. I mean, when I think of Japan and the Japanese people, I think of a high level of integrity. That's, you know, that's just my perception, but, you know, there's a strong work ethic, and it just appears to me that many people there have a sense of honor. And
yeah,
so,
but I think the important thing here is to think about, like, public versus private, right? You have the public histories, and those are official. And what these documents are is they came from, like, individual people, or they came from shrines. But in any sense, like in any case, they're like personal accounts, and so, you know, people can get interested in them, but when they start to, like, take over the public sphere, like they start to actually challenge authority, then it gets to be controversial in the same way that it would be, like, controversial in any country. But just that's the way they think about it in Japan is that, you know, we already have our history. We know what those records look like. And what was happening before then, I mean, we can leave that to the archaeologists, basically. So, yeah, they do have a very, like, structured way of dealing with it in that way, yeah.
It's fascinating.
And also,
and then,
religion. In
right,
religion.
Right, it is rigid in that way, yeah.
Yes, yes. The stories of Moses involved there, and the story of Jesus involved there, and the Jews possibly being from Japan and Jewish. I mean, all these things, if those were released, that would might scrape against the grain of other beliefs, right?
Right. I actually, my friend, Shinichi Nakaya, you pronounced his name very well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. One of those groups of immigrants that came to Japan, they were known for their unusual religious practices. And he said, you know, do you think these people, they might be like Christians or some sort of Jewish group that migrated along the Silk Road and then into Japan? And that's like his theory, right? It's a very interesting theory, but how do we prove it, right? How do we really prove that any of these documents are real? That's just the way this is dealt with. But I feel like you should read them anyway. because they provide such a, you know, such surprising teachings.
Right. And they spoke also of Sumerian.
Yeah, that was an interesting bit, that when you had this world emperor who had he was able to resolve conflicts, and he was named Sumera Mikoto. So when the first tribe broke away from him, they called themselves the Sumerians.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting, like, I don't know, linguistic coincidence right there.
That was fascinating.
Yeah.
And they talk about a flying ship that he had, this one emperor that he could, also he lent it out occasionally.
Yeah,
it was kind of fun.
It's actually a common legend in Japan. Yeah. They have this flying ship called the Ame no Ukifune. And in the official documents, they say that ship came down from heaven and it landed in central Japan, and that a tribe of people who were living there were all descended from the people from that ship. So in the Takenouchi documents, they say actually the emperor had access to that ship, and he could travel like quickly all over the world using that technology. I think that it's very strange that that's in the official documents, and the Takenouchi documents, they provide a new light on that, which really gets you thinking.
Sure does.
What did you think when you read that? I mean, was that a shock to you, or had you seen other things in the past culture that would lead you to think that this could be in fact true?
Well, when I first saw an article about that, I couldn't really believe what I was reading. I was like, is this something, you know, someone made up, or is this from a real historical document? And I had to go confirm it, like, you know, in several different sources, and they all said, yeah, this is, you know, the Mononobe tribe came down in a flying ship. And so that was a real surprise to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then when they broke off, Sumerian appeared. Now look at what we have with the Sumerians. You know, and this is even further back, one step back from them.
Right.
Yeah.
And you have this image at the time, you know, the age of the world emperor was this sort of golden age throughout the whole world. It's something you see in the legends across ancient cultures. They have the golden age and silver age and iron and bronze. And you can imagine in that golden age, they must have had some sort of amazing, like, physical and spiritual technologies that made people remember it very fondly.
Right. Do you know what color they were out of the five color group, or what color the emperor was?
Right. So you have those five color races that were scattered across the world. Like, they aren't in any, like, particular continent or anything. They're just scattered all over the place. But the emperor is supposed to be above all the colors because, you know, he's supposed to look down on all those people equally and treat them equally. And so he will marry, like, you know, anyone from any group. And, you know, the Japanese, they all, because they lived in that nation where the emperor was, they also had a mission to, you know, propagate the spiritual teachings around the world.
Right.
And
so he had no distinct color.
I'm sorry, go
color.
Ahead, Becky.
Yeah, he had no distinct color. In other words, there were five different color races. But he had, it's not written what he was then, right?
Exactly. He is above all the colors.
Right. Okay, that's it. I wonder if Anunnaki is within any of the documents.
Well, there's so much to research, and I was really just scraping the surface, you know? I feel like if you look in there, you can definitely find parallels, because a lot of the Takenouchi documents are just a record of all of those ancient emperors. They're like over 100 of them. And I'm sure you can find things that match up to Egyptian stuff or, you know, other world traditions too.
Wow.
And what
That's
was the
amazing.
Symbol of the chrysanthemum? What was the significance of that?
Right. This is the symbol that's used by the emperors today too. The chrysanthemum is, you know, it's a flower with many leaves. You'll see this often in Japan, like on a flag or something. It's just the symbol of the emperor. But in the Takenouchi documents, they have this idea that those many leaves, they represent the many different kinds of people in the world, and they have the bulb of the flower in the center shows that they're all being linked. So the Takenouchi researchers say that, you know, this was a symbol of the ancient tradition, and it actually looks like some of the symbols used in the Mu books by James Churchward about the Lost Continent.
Oh, you're talking about the Royal Cross?
Yeah. And okay. the symbol of the sun is also very interesting, because Japan was supposed to be the land of the rising sun. And in that way, like the world emperor was symbolic of the sun.
So that you mean the sun cross?
Yeah. That's an independent thing that we didn't find in the documents, but there was that researcher who had a vision of the sun and a cross within it, and that I thought that was very interesting, because that's another symbol that you'll see all over the world.
Right, I sure do. I get pictures of cross orbs that look exactly like the sun cross, actual pictures, they're round. So, and I've seen that was pretty ancient, and it's showing up here in your book too, and it showed up in other books. So that's of great interest to me.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting that it just came to him in a vision, right? He was a Christian, he was a musician, he had a very normal life in Japan, and then one night he just saw this cross in the moon, and after that he started, you know, he started discovering all sorts of sources of, like, ancient texts, which eventually led him to, you know, finding artifacts about the Takenouchi documents. So it's interesting how that started off his spiritual journey, and he went, you know, all over the Far East searching for evidence of this stuff.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's great stuff,
triggered.
Too, because, I mean, it feels like, you know, with you writing this book, which, again, for our listeners, it's called The Sacred Science of Ancient Japan, Lost Chronicles of the Age of the Gods by Avery Morrow. It's available on Amazon.com. It's a great book. There's just so much information here, and as you mentioned, you've barely scratched the surface with this. And within your book, there's a lot of mystery also that hasn't been solved. At least some of this divinatory stuff, like this divination chart that you published in the book, it's like nobody knows how to use this thing. But it looks really cool.
Right. Where if people do know how to use it, they aren't telling anyone, right?
Uh-huh. Well, I wonder, I mean, I know, Becky, you're good with symbols, but, you know, when I look at this, it just seems like this could really be a great tool if we could figure out how it works.
Well, yes, you're talking about the lines and the circles?
Yeah, I mean, it almost looks like the chrysanthemum a little bit, the way it's laid out. With the bowl in the center and then the petals. It looks very similar to that. But then it's got all of these symbols that I don't look familiar to me, but they're just fascinating.
Yeah, they do. Yes.
Right,
they
those
great
symbols are syllables of the ancient language, and they're actually built on this, you know, this regular this system that set it up, which is also in that chapter. So maybe, you know, one way to read it would be to take an ancient Japanese word, and you can break it up that way. But it's not really clear, actually. And it's interesting that we know that ancient Japan had some kind of divination. Like that's in the archaeology, that's in all the ancient texts. But we don't know, like, how they did it or what sort of results they were getting from it. And so these documents, they provide us with, you know, these ideas of what that divination might have been. And unfortunately, I couldn't find anything that, you know, is really, like, can be performed by us. But we give that record of a Chinese kind of divination that was performed, and then it gave rise to this, you know, this channeled text, this automatic writing. which is what I'm researching right now. And that's a really surprising kind of thing too.
Well, when you found this divination chart, was this by itself in one manuscript, or was this just a page in a longer manuscript? I'm just wondering if it stood out or if it was a compilation of other things.
Yeah, it's part of a book that it has 50 syllables, and so it has each of the syllables and explains what they mean in the chart. But that document is actually off limits. It's still being kept by this private household, and someone made a copy of it, but we don't know what other sort of text might be around that, or if that family knows how to do the divination. Like, they aren't telling us. All we have is that very mysterious image and the context that has something to do with divination.
This is just piquing my interest. Like, I can't even tell you. I just want to find out more about this. It just speaks to me, and I'm sure it does, and it's going to speak to anybody who picks up your book and reads this. It's a fascinating chart. It is so unusual.
Yes, it is unusual. Wow. I'm looking
at
it. It's just like, wow.
Unfortunately, I don't have the, there's no English translation for the stuff associated with that chart, but for the ancient stories that are also written in that ancient script, there is an English translation, which is published by a guy named, I believe it's Andrew Driver. And I was corresponding with him, and he says, this is a really rich source of material here. There's all sorts of stuff there, all sorts of, ancient teachings and legends. And I think it's going to be, a valuable source of information for many years to come.
Well, that's really encouraging. I just think that there's something about this. The feeling that I get, and I don't know, Becky, I want to hear what you think about this, because I know, like I said before, you're really great with symbols. But the feeling I get is this is older than dirt. I mean, this thing is so old. And, I mean, that's the feeling I get from this, that when I'm looking at this, I'm looking at just something that's, more than 100,000 years old. This goes back so far, and I think it's one of the most ancient things that has survived. That's the feeling I get from this. What do you think, Becky?
Yes, it does. Yeah, it does. It absolutely does feel that way. And it feels really, probably because it's so far back, it feels very clean and clear, like absolute. That's the feeling I get from it when I look. It's just kind of like really clean and clear and not super busy, very, as a matter of fact, and simple. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is.
It's pretty amazing.
I'm wondering if when it was constructed to be used, if the inner, because you've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, there's 4 circles around one circle, and I'm just wondering if these were made to turn, so that you would turn them in one way or another, and then certain other energies would line up with them.
Yeah, movement. That's,
mm-hmm.
that's really good.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And that, this is all about, heaven and earth and the planet. I mean, it is all in, it's all there.
And
it is, really amazing to hear you say this stuff, because that's exactly what the Japanese people talking about this say. They say, we don't know where this came from. We don't have the exact source, but it feels so ancient. And when they read out the poems, some of which I put little excerpts of it in my book, they say, this is so clearly ancient poetry, and it has a rhythm to it, things that can't be produced today. But that chart, the three symbols in the middle, they do represent heaven and earth in that way. They're A, U, Wa. and there's a sort of opening and a closing sound. So I do think it's very deeply symbolic, maybe in ways that we can't even understand today.
Now, in your book, you have this reproduced in black and white. In the actual manuscript, was it in color?
Actually, because that's a, you know, it's a privately held manuscript, I don't know about that. And I do know that the poem was in black and white, but you know, as for divination, there could be other stuff going on. I'm not really sure.
Fascinating. Mm. Well, I think there's a sound that goes with each one of these symbols. That's the other thing that I pick up pretty clearly about this. But this is transformational. If you could find the keys to this, it would transform your entire being, not just your consciousness. This is a powerful thing that you put in this book.
Yeah.
Wow, it's really great to hear that, and I'm sure there's going to be, you know, I really hope people are going to get interested in these Japanese teachings from now on.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, anybody's interested in their evolution and their own consciousness and enlightenment should buy this book just to get this chart.
Yeah, it would be well worth it. Yeah.
Oh, you're not kidding, Becky. I mean, it's worth the $16 just to get this ancient chart.
Yes, it's amazing.
Mean, yes.
I do have a I think it's a group that put the colors on it, but I have a color version of the chart on my wall. There's a group of people studying this in Japan who think this is really powerful, and they made an English, you know, translation of the syllables, the sounds, and mm-hmm. they made a little wall hanging out of it. So I have that right here with me.
How
wow.
funny. Well, I guess, Becky, we're not so far off than looking at this.
Yeah, that's right. Somewhere. We've seen it somewhere.
We've seen it before. Well, it's just amazing. And really, Avery, I have to commend you for this, the work you've done in putting this all together in such a well-written book. It's just been a fascinating read. I know very little about Japan, and it was interesting to read all of this, the accepted history and then the para-history, excuse me, that you've reported on. But again, I think you've unearthed some things that you probably don't even know about yet in terms of their power and their ability mm-hmm. to make change happen inside the human psyche. It's again, I can't take my eyes off this chart now. Everybody in the audience is going to have to run out and get this book so you'll know what we're all talking about.
Yeah, what we're talking about. It's like creation looking right at it.
Yeah, here
wow.
it is. This is the big stuff. This is the big stuff. So
wow.
let's take a short commercial break. If you have a question for Avery, please call in at 646-478-0828. Again, that is 646-478-0828. Stay tuned, everybody. We will be right back.
Your property tax bill. Have you seen it lately? It's frightening. Your property taxes are going up while your home value is going down. It's time to fight back and win. For the real truth about the property tax system, get attorney Pat Quintilian's book, Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Attorney Quintilian answers all your questions and gives you the facts you need to fight a property tax bill that is spiraling out of control. You'll also read about what happens to property owners who don't check their property records, only to find out too late they're taxed on square footage, fixtures, and even buildings that they don't own. Is this happening to you? Learn your rights. Buy Attorney Pat Quintilian's book today. Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Available on Amazon.com.
Bonjour, this is Véronique Raskin, founder of the Organic One Company. As one of the pioneers of the Organic One movement, since 1980, I have brought you the very best and most authentic organic wines directly to your table. I work with small family estates who grow certified organic grapes and produce exceptional wines. You can purchase our wines individually from our website at theorganicwinecompany.com or join one of our wine clubs. Our organic wines are perfect for you and for your family as gifts for friends and relatives, and they are simply spectacular for the holidays. Visit us at theorganicwinecompany.com to enjoy the very best organic wines conveniently delivered to your door. I am Véronique Raskin, passionate about my mission. I offer to you vegan, organic, and biodynamic wines, wines made by people of the heart, wines with a heart. Au revoir. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE.
Are you ready for a new experience of freedom and powerful connection? Would you like a positive, effortless change in your life? Then come to CosmicFusion.com, where we offer the most advanced energy clearing and expansion techniques in the world, with a quantum vortex energy to activate your divine blueprint and life's purpose. When your soul leads the way with cosmic fusion and quantum vortex energy, you can break clear of past difficulties and blocks with the power of the source. With cosmic fusion, the source energy does the work for you. It's easy and effortless. Listen to our free meditation right from our Cosmic Fusion website, the Cosmic Code Meditation. Sign up for one of our interactive webinars today. Come to Cosmic Fusion, www.kosmicfusion.com, to experience an effortless awakening and transformation. Are you ready for an upgrade? Are you ready for a new experience of living in the fifth dimensional magic and powerful connection? Then visit CosmicFusion.com today. CosmicFusion.com.
Everybody, we are having a fascinating discussion tonight with author Avery Morrow, who has written a great book called The Sacred Science of Ancient Japan, Lost Chronicles of the Age of the Gods. So, Avery, this chart, I'm so sorry, I just can't leave this chart alone. I got to tell you, during the commercial break, I was staring at this thing and thinking, what is it? I think that you have provided a big key here. I mean, this is a key that goes beyond a lot of the things that I've ever seen. So I think if people worked with this, whether it's just meditating on it or drawing it for themselves or whatever, they're going to experience a shift in their consciousness that could be massive. And it is about something you said earlier in the show, connecting things up to what's inside. So it's not just words, it's not just symbols. It's connected to your inner self and also the God part of us. It's almost like this could activate. This chart could actually activate this. I hate to call it a chart because it's not really a chart. It's something much bigger than that. So it's an amazing thing. Did you know that you did such a big thing here?
Yeah, can you hear me, first of all?
I can hear you now.
All right, good. I was kind of worried about that. Yeah, one last thing I wanted to note about this is that you have these 47 sounds here, and it is part of a cosmic thing. On the previous page there, I have this song that goes, Akahamana ikihi nimiyuku. And that song is about the it's like a sort of primordial sound that like puts language in order, and so I think there is some sort of link there where that has all of the 47 sounds, and so does that chart, and they have the ah wa at the ends, and those two are in the middle. So I do think there is, you know, there's something that can be studied there. Maybe we can get out further meanings from that. But yeah, I mean I only have the faintest idea of what this all is about. And
well, you are the messenger, and you brought an incredible message to people, not only with your book, but especially with this particular diagram and chart. And you know, I'm thinking of also, who may be a resource on this, is our guest last week, who was Lon Milo Duquette. He is a great occultist and an author of 16 books on the occult, but he's very astute and a very learned man, and especially when it comes to symbols. And I wonder, maybe we should put this in front of Lon, Becky. What do you think?
Yeah. You think he'd be surprised, huh? He'll probably say, where did you get this?
Yeah.
We'll have to say Avery.
Yeah, that's right. But I'm just thinking, Avery, of some people that maybe Becky and I could speak with about this and get this in front of them. But also Becky and I, and also Helene, do some work together, and we could also see what comes out of this and send you the information we receive on it if you'd like.
Yeah, I really just learned recently about this whole world of symbolism, that the things that I'm researching are all tied into. And this summer I'm going to be going to a conference for occult and esoteric studies, and I'm going to be handing these around and saying, like, is there anything you find familiar with these? But I would love to hear about anything you find out.
Well, we'll be happy to share this with you and our listeners. Again, sign up for our newsletter at supernaturalgirlswithaz.com, and we'll start putting information in the newsletter about what we find. So make sure you're signed up so that you can be on the cutting edge with this particular piece of information, which is a golden key, no question about it. It is a golden key. And isn't this funny that you're going to be doing that workshop? You know, the people you hand this to, they're just going to love you for this. This is a big deal, Avery.
If they understand anything, right? I have to figure out how to explain it all first. It's just this whole universe that we weren't aware of yet.
Well, but it's part of who we are. You know, it's part of our heritage. And as you said, the cosmic connection, it's right here in this. In this amazing, amazing chart. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's all there. And it's interesting that you did say that there was a sound that was associated with all these symbols. And we're going to help you get to the bottom of this. It's a fascinating, fascinating mystery. So we'll start working
on
it, right, Becky?
We'll be experimenting with those sounds in this chart. Yes, absolutely. See what comes forth.
That's right.
Sounds amazing.
Any big explosions happening over our houses, you'll know what we've been doing.
You know what happened. Jeez.
One thing I do recommend that I think this is tied into is there's this Shinto concept called Kotodama, which means like the spiritual power of words. And There's a group right here in Santa Fe that's writing about, you know, how each of these syllables has a meaning in Kotodama. And I couldn't put that whole thing into my book, but that's something that you saw in this chart, and I wouldn't say it's well known, but I think it's a very powerful thing in Japan that people use all the time even though they don't know about it.
Oh, wow.
Well, certainly you, Becky, know the power of language with the ancient angelic language that you speak
write.
So you understand that on a very deep personal level. And so that's why I think we'll be able to get to the bottom of this and share this with everybody.
Absolutely. You can feel it when you speak words such as those or sounds. The vibration, you can even feel it in your throat, in your body, the strength of the vibration. You can feel that.
Absolutely.
It's just amazing.
You know, last week, Avery, during our paranormal news segment, we were talking about Malta. And underneath the island, there are all of these they don't exactly know what they are. They call them caverns, but they're like carved out of stone from ancient times. And in these places, you can go in there, and when you make a sound, a chant or whatever, you can actually feel it. It makes your bones vibrate. That's how powerful this is. And the construct of these caverns apparently allows for this, and a particular hertz that occurs when you use any sound in this area. So again, the ancients really understood the power of words and sounds and symbols. It's lost to us. I mean, here you are trying to help reconstruct what the ancients knew, and my goodness, look at what you're up against. All this secrecy, these manuscripts owned by private families that they don't want to be forthcoming with these things. So it's really a very difficult task to try to unveil all of this for the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned echoes. I didn't know that about those the caverns in Malta.
Oh yeah.
The syllables echo back when you say them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a similar thing to the last document I was talking about, where they talk about the echoes of the Kami, and that you can speak in certain ways and feel those vibrations, and that's the way that some of those documents were produced, is that, you know, people were able to get those, you know, vibrations, I don't know, out of the universe somehow, and that they turned it into poetry.
And wow. That's beautiful. And again, you know, when you think about how the world is today and how it was in ancient times, in the Golden Age, when there was the one emperor, whatever, everything's so different now, and it just seems like everywhere you turn, there's a struggle for power, and it's all-encompassing. So the truth gets obscured, and I think it's one of the things that was underestimated in the great plan for this planet, in my opinion. It's like, here's the truth you're trying to bring out, and I think in the angelic realm and other places, they were thinking, well, people will recognize the truth. They'll see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I
That's
think
right.
Some of us do, but there's such a massive brainwashing effort to keep us lazy and not responsible for our actions, so that we don't get to the deeper truths that you're presenting in your book, The Sacred Science of Ancient Japan, and other writers are doing trying to do the same. It's like, look, we do have the God particle. We are a part of the cosmos, and I think that a lot of people in power are quite threatened by that, because they like to have control. They like to rule us, and certainly you're bringing out information like this. There's questions about how we are being governed, and the secrecy, and all these things that are duplicitously done behind our backs. So is this in our best interest to continue on this current path, or is it best to really look into the ancient past and find out the truth and the power of each individual? That's kind
of
my rant.
You know, that's yeah, that's something that often comes up in the people who are talking about these documents is that today we're so confused, you know. We've had all of these sources of information that confuse us. And in the case of the Kotodama, the power of language, even the Japanese language is confused these days. So you have some of the ancient language, and you can find out in that last chapter that, for example, in the ancient language, they had the idea of space as the word for that was ma, which means like a not only like a space or opening, but also like a chance or opportunity, and time was ima, which is the same thing. Like, you know, every moment is an opportunity for us to, you know, for creativity, for creation. That's the original Japanese language, but these days there's all sorts of imported words in Japanese, and that, of course, they don't have the same meaning, right? They'll have the same syllable, but it doesn't carry that same power. So people are, you know, the people who write about this are very concerned about that. Will people even understand these documents in 100 years' time? And we definitely have this problem that we have these ancient teachings, but we might not understand what they're about today.
Yeah, it's a stretch. I mean, to try to understand what in the world they were talking about. I mean, we've come so far from our original purpose and our original instructions. And again, just even going back to what we were talking about at the beginning, you know, an 85-step path to a better nation. I mean, just common sense. And this, what we're seeing here today around the world, this lack of an internal moral compass, because, again, as you said, well, they're not really commandments. It's speaking to an inner part of us. But have we lost that internal moral compass completely? It seems that way at times. So, you know, will we connect to these words of wisdom without it?
Yeah, the conclusion of my book, that's something I was really concerned about, is that people try to shove these teachings out of the way because of, like, you know, archaeology or science or stuff like that, but we really don't realize the limits of those professions and that they can't really, you know, they can't tell us, or, you know, the meaning of life or our own journeys in the world. And that's something that you can really get not only from these documents, but from all sorts of ancient teachings. It's really fascinating, the sort of stuff that we used to know and that we've forgotten these days.
Well, it's absolutely true. It is. There's so much forgotten knowledge. And again, I think that was the misunderstanding for us, where, you know, we have to kind of take a turn in another direction and look at things like this. And again, there's a question in the chat room. What is the title of the book? The title of the book is The Sacred Science of Ancient Japan, Lost Chronicles of the Age of the Gods by Avery Morrow, available on Amazon.com. We need to look at this. I mean, here, this is our salvation, in my opinion.
Right now I'm reading the Eastern Classics with, you know, it's a very, very small program. We're reading about Taoism and Confucianism, and what I'm finding there is so startling. It's just such simple stuff, but when you keep it in mind, the way, you know, your way of life can really be transformed, and you realize that, you know, people in the past were like us, but, you know, they were able to think about these things and really get in touch with, you know, the human spirit, with our souls, and it's all about, you know, I find it just amazing. Like, if we could just read these classic texts, it would really be great for the world.
That is,
you're right.
I'd like to ask you about the Cosmic Eight marriage script.
Yeah, yeah. That's
the circles,
a really interesting,
and the cords.
Story. Yeah.
Because, yes, I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, this is something that is the most recent of the documents that I described. It comes with this, like, fascinating story, but it's so close to us in time, and we have all of these modern confusions that the guy said, like, you know, I can't explain why this happened to me, but I just have to tell you like it is. And that he was in the mountains in like remote part of China, and he, you know, his employees out there, they wanted to go to this Taoist temple to celebrate a festival, and he went inside, and he saw that the monk there had this, like, a, you know, amazing kettle that could boil water really quickly with like very little fuel. And he's like, how where do you get that from? And he said, I bought it, you know, a long time ago. It came from Japan. He refused to explain. But eventually the guy, you know, this person, Mr. Narasaki, was so insistent that he told him that in ancient times there was this, you know, tribe of people who had mastered all sorts of technologies, and that they had this script which is like symmetrical. And it looks, you know, it looks just like circles and crosses and little circles all the way around. It's a really very interesting thing. Like the script it doesn't go left to right, like line, but it spirals out. Like it's, you know, this constant, continuous creation. And later on, that same guy, he found a document written in that script. And it's like this just amazing story for how we have these documents today. And, how can we explain this? Well, really, the best thing to do is just to read those poems for yourself, because they have so many layers of meaning. And I only put one of them into the book, but each one of them, you can break them down into their individual sounds in the Kotodama, and they all have meanings that just like build up, and it's really beautiful poetry.
It was amazing, and I'll tell you a little bit why, to me, is the circles and the chords. This type of script was given to my mother. And
wow.
She has it in her books that are out there. And they were given to her from the elders, the angels. And I was just amazed when I opened this up and I seen this. I was absolutely amazed. And I actually spoke with my mom today, and she's very excited to see this, which will probably be tomorrow that she'll be looking at your book and seeing this. But she was given this with the circles and the chords. And we've always wondered, you know, what is this and what is it saying? You know, and we thought the closest thing possibly was what they have known as the angels. Symbols or angel language with the chords and circles, but this even tells us even more and shows it's even, you know, very ancient, you know, and of course angels are ancient too, but I mean just seeing this was so exciting.
Wow, that is really fascinating. And you know, I didn't put this in my book, but that script has appeared to other people in Japan.
Wow.
And there was this one person who just started seeing these circles and chords and started writing it down, and eventually they discovered that it was the same script that's in this book. But that is,
wow,
really something. I would love to learn about that. Yeah.
Yes. She received that quite a while ago, and it's in her book, and this was, I was amazed to see the Cosmic Eight Marriage script. Wow.
Oh man, I have to see that for myself. I'm really, that is just amazing. Yeah.
Well, you'll be,
yes,
able to, because the book is,
yes,
being reprinted, and it's called The Andreasen Affair, and it is being reprinted by New Page, and it'll be out this fall. So The Andreasen Affair was out of print for a little while because it was on the New York Times bestseller list. It was a big hit when it came out in 1979 and 1980. But now New Page will be reprinting it, so it'll be available for everybody.
That,
yes,
is just great. I'm going to take a look at that for myself.
Yes.
Yeah, you really
should.
It's also an excellent book. I think you'll love reading it. And here it is again. And let me ask you, because now that you brought this up, that there was someone else, and there have been other people in Japan that have received this, have they had any other information that's come along with the symbols where they were able to give an understanding or translation or anything like that?
Well, I was really, you know, there's just so much stuff out there. So I started reading this, and I realized that this is an account of, you know, like a sort of like a channeling as a sort of spiritual message. And I thought that was, you know, it was really interesting, but then that would hold you a whole other story in my chapter. So I did look at the messages a little bit. You know, it was basically a message of cosmic harmony, and you know, it I think it affirms some of the things that are in my book. But I didn't see any detailed information about, you know, like what is this script? Like why was he seeing these messages? Why was it in this medium? So I think that, you know, that was very mysterious. But it does say that it's from thousands of years ago. But these scripts, they do seem to resemble the angelic scripts that are, you know, very familiar to us from, you know, from the European like occult world and stuff like that. I do think there's a link there, yeah.
Is it similar to the Enochian language? Have you looked into that?
Yeah, I was looking at the Enochian language, but, you know, the only stuff we have written in Enochian is just, it's this code, right? And there's so many ways to read it. And it doesn't look like my documents, but I think it has this, you know, similar thing that this isn't something that was like made up for fun. Like it has profound meanings that we can't really get to the depths of yet.
Right. You know, yeah. I have seen some of these symbols one other place, and it's with another UFO abductee. I have seen, she has drawn these symbols also, and I have copies of them. So interesting.
Wow.
It's interesting. Yeah, there's
like I said, I just started learning about all of this symbolism really recently, and I'm really excited to learn about what these Japanese things might be able to link into other things from around the world.
Well, you've got your
amazing
work cut out for you.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
And documents and things like that have been hidden from our eyes and our ears. I mean, to bring them out like this is wonderful. And yes, please continue your work, because just even this alone opened up another door for us, you know,
yeah,
with the chart, with this, with also this amazing cosmic eight-mirrored script, and then also with the chart. I mean, these are doors that are open. They've been hidden from people. And once, you know, someone like you, brilliant, goes in there and gets the answers and shows what's there, it just opens doors for thousands of people, and things get connected and understanding comes forth. I love it. Great job, Avery.
Yeah.
I'm really glad to hear that. And I really hope this book is helpful just as an introduction to this whole, you know, this whole world of stuff that we haven't found out about yet.
Well, Becky brings
Absolutely.
Up another very valid point, which is by bringing this book out and all of the symbols and things that were included in the manuscripts, you are linking people together that have had these experiences. So that's another connection that's taking place. You may not have foreseen or expected, but it is a very important one that you're doing. You've initiated with this book.
Yeah, you know, because I have a background in studying religion, I could have just written some, you know, like academic thesis about this, but I thought, no, this is really profound. I really need, you know, I need to get this message out there, because I'm sure there's all sorts of people who can, you know, who can add to this in ways that I would never be able to find out myself.
That's,
you know,
sure,
I have
enough.
A feeling with you, I'm going to just put it out there, however crazy you may think it is, it's fine. but
sure.
I just very clearly saw you as a scribe way back when. And if you really let your mind drift when you're interpreting and translating what you're reading, I think you would understand it on a whole other level. Because I think you've seen these before.
You know, my group of friends and I here, I've often felt like, you know, we're born into the wrong era, and I felt like I was just recently thinking, oh, if this were the Middle Ages, I would be perfectly happy, like, you know, in a monastery working as a scribe or something like that. I think you're onto something.
Yeah, I just saw you clear as a bell, and you loved your work, and so that's why I'm saying that. And I also see you as somebody who not just wrote this, but also delivered it to other people along the line. There was some lineage, some connection here, and you knew all of the players. You did your work and then delivered it to the next person. So, yeah, I think if you let yourself really drift into another state of consciousness, you'd have even more information, and then you'd be getting it right from the source.
Yeah, yeah.
Use the chart.
Yeah.
All right.
That's right.
Yes. Open that
up. You got
up
the key. You've got the key right there. It's amazing. Let me ask
that
you
is.
This also, Avery. You've got this fabulous story in here about, what was it, the 800 warriors that
This
is a wild story, but I was intrigued.
Yeah.
Tell us more about this.
Yes.
Yeah, so we have the story of Amaterasu, the sun goddess, in the official histories, and all we know about her is that like she was experienced with weapons. And in the second text that I talk about, that same character, the sun goddess, is told as a male prince who was like leading a kingdom, and he had a very small group of people who were they were more like teachers than government bureaucrats or anything. So when their kingdom came under attack, instead of going after them with force, he figured out the right message or the right thing to send to these people that would stop their anger or would stop the willingness to fight. And I think that really speaks to something there. The correct resolution of all of these things was to figure out this spiritual problem that was lying underneath these people that caused them to rebel. And I think that really shows that this document is more than just history. It also, it has a message about some sort of, like a teaching, a tradition, an eternal truth, whatever you want to call it.
Well, it's definitely a wisdom. I mean, to be able, again, to turn back the aggressor without more aggression. It's just an amazing story of what took place. And they were a small group against a large group, as I recall from your book, right?
That's right. It was, it's supposed to be like 800 people against like thousands at a time who are coming at them. But I think there really is, it's trying to convey some wisdom there. I've lost my train of thought, but yeah.
That happens to us.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about Moses? I was really fascinated with that, with Moses in there.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see this too, that in the book that talks about the world emperor and this ancient like millions of years past history with Atlantis and Lemuria and all the lost continents and stuff, they say that in more recent times, like in more historical times, they weren't able to use the flying ship anymore. Continents sunk. There were disasters. There were floods. There was all sorts of stuff going on. So the great spiritual teachers of the world had to travel to Japan. And so what the document says is that we had Buddha, Jesus, Moses, and they all walked or traveled by some means to Japan and learned the single tradition there, and then went back to their home countries and then taught that to their people, and that became our, the various things that we have now.
Uh-huh. And Moses,
Jesus, for example, is a very interesting thing. Like there was a guy, a European guy, who said that Jesus went to India and that he learned the teachings from the Indian masters or the Tibetans or something like that. But in this document, he walks through India, just keeps on going to the secret concealed center in Japan, and that's where he gets the real information.
Uh-huh.
So that's where he was trained, you said,
right,
in your book, as according to this document, in the ways of a ninja.
Right. That's how one of the proponents of the documents describes it. That's one of the documents that was burned. We don't have the records of it anymore. But the people who read it said he was trained in ninja techniques. He was able to walk on water, right? He was able to disappear or fly up into the air or all sorts of stuff. And then he went back to Israel with those special techniques.
Wow.
And then it goes further, too, to talk about that he was not the one that was crucified on the cross. That wasn't him.
Yeah, that was a surprise to me. It's very, very specific about that, that his brother died in his place, and then he continued to travel around the world like, you know, spreading the tradition, and in fact came back to Japan, and that's how they knew. And today there's a place in Japan that says that it's the gravesite of Jesus. It's a, you know, it's a bit of a tourist attraction. There's like a cross there, and it shows his grave, and it shows like the records that they think are connected. It's a very interesting thing. Yeah.
They said he lived to 119 years old.
Yeah, and also that he had, like, you know, disciples from all different nations of the world, and he had, you know, Native American disciples and German and African and all sorts of people.
That was really something different in the documents. And with Moses, Moses was even able to get the ship from the emperor to fly here or there. That was surprising.
Right, that's interesting. Like, it took him from, you know, Mount Sinai, and then he came back, and he had the Ten Commandments. But
yes,
one of the things that they discovered was supposed to be the Ten Commandments, like the original ones that he broke. And those are like they aren't commandments like we think of it. They aren't rules for people, like, you know, honor thy father and mother, honor God. Instead, it's very, you know, much more internal teachings, like you must uphold the goodness and frown upon evil, and it's
right.
The sort of things that should just reflect back on what's already within people.
Spiritual, right?
Yeah.
And then
exactly.
It was the second set after he broke them were different.
Right. Right.
Wow. And that's all documented. Wow.
That's fascinating
yeah.
to me. And yeah, and also it kind of really illustrates the whole issue, doesn't it? I mean, breaking from our inner truth and inner connection to something from the outside.
Right, right. And this is something you can actually find in many East Asian teachings, like the Tao Te Ching, the very, very famous short little one. That one says, we had the Tao, right, the original way, the way that all people knew. And then when the Tao disappeared, then its attributes appeared, like, you know, the specific things that we think of as virtuous. And when those disappeared, then, like, rules and regulations appeared. And that, you know, that's one of the things that I'm reading right now, and that really spoke to me, you know?
Yeah, that's profound, and it certainly speaks to me too. It's exactly what's happened. So we look to rules, and if you don't feel it on the inside, the rules don't really apply. They don't make any difference. They're just empty.
Right, right. And it's when people feel like rules are meaningless, that's when they just, you know, they throw the whole thing out and get things from whatever source they see, you know, they get it from the media, they get it from, like, just what's immediately in front of them, and this is part of this whole confusion, you know?
It is.
Wow.
It's really true, what you just said. That's exactly true, and it's kind of scary. But it's,
where's
again,
the emperor? We need the emperor back.
We do, and we need to find the emperor within ourselves to
exactly.
make good decisions and really understand everything that is about us and where's our own internal moral compass. What are we connected to?
Right, and the things the emperor taught were, you know, to be good to one another and do the things that were right. I mean, these are just natural things you should do naturally. So if you lived those things and really did them naturally out of the goodness of the spirit, then really that would be all rules null and void, because you wouldn't even have to follow them. Rules are made because things are done wrong, so it will stop people from doing things wrong. Really, that's what they are.
Yeah, that's
so,
right. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as you can see,
wow.
People have stopped following the rules, and they also have lost the interconnection with themselves, so that's not a good thing.
That's not good. That's why the angels are leaving messages everywhere, symbolic ones and speaking ones. It's like, wake up, people.
That's right. And
yeah.
This book will help people wake up. And again, the name of this book is The Sacred Science of Ancient Japan, Lost Chronicles of the Age of the Gods. So what else can you tell us about this journey you were on with this book? Did you have any paranormal experiences when you were researching this or when you were visiting these temples and unusual places in Japan?
Well, I've had, you know, I haven't had anything absolutely paranormal, but there have been some very strange coincidences when I, you know, when I really get out there, you know, into the country, and I started going to the ancient Shinto shrines. Like, for example, I decided I would take a hike. I had no idea about this, but apparently there was this spiritualist who said that if you walk from one shrine to the other, then like that this is like the, you know, the original bond between the two can be discovered through that. I had no idea about that, but I just felt like I should try doing that for myself. And it turned like I was walking along. It took like about like, you know, 2 hours on this little mountain road. And I realized I had taken a wrong turn, and that was real bad because there was nobody on this road. It was just forest and like farms and mountains. And so I started walking back, and like I was holding out my thumb for like hitchhiking in case anyone happened to come by. And this guy came and picked me up, and I said, take me back to the city. And he said, what are you doing out here? I said, oh, I was just trying to get to this shrine, but I had messed up. And he said, oh, I was trying to go there too.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah, so we ended up going there together, which was, you know, it was a real interesting thing that happened there. And I've definitely... Doing this research has connected me with all sorts of things. I just had, you know, no premonition that this sort of stuff would happen.
That's amazing. Now, what do you do? What happens when you visit a shrine? Kind of walk us through that.
Right.
Entering
so,
shrine,
as,
cave,
as I
bird,
said,
what are you supposed to do?
Yeah, a shrine is like a, you know, it's an ancient building. It's usually they usually don't know how old they are. And they store like historical documents, and they store the kami, you know, the divinity, or it could be like a memorial for some person who lived long ago, and so it's a sort of a place of that's like honored among the local people. It doesn't necessarily mean like you have to belong to some religion to go there, and anyone can go there really. And the process for going there is very simple. You step inside this gate, the famous Torii gate, which you often see in, you know, like books about Japan and stuff like that. And inside the gate is like a sacred place. Like you wash your hands to show that you're purifying yourself, and then you just, you know, you go up to the shrine and clap a couple of times, and that's it. That shows that, you know, you respect whoever that might be, you know, whoever the shrine might be honoring, and otherwise you're free to, you know, explore and look at what's around there. So it's a very loose thing. It's not about, you know, it's not about believing in this or that. It's really just about, you know, showing your respect in a, you know, in a formal way, and yeah, anyone can do it.
You take your shoes off when you go inside? Is that another form of showing respect?
Yeah.
In a Japanese house, you usually do that, and that's, you know, it's a cleanliness thing. I guess the same general idea. A shrine, actually, there's a building, and usually if you're just visiting, you're outside, so you don't take your shoes off. But if you have a special ritual that you're going to, like a baby is being named, or, you know, you're taking your kids there for a special ceremony, then you'll go inside on the straw mats, and you take your shoes off and, you know, sit down the Japanese way. And they have, you know, they have this ancient ceremony that they perform in those circumstances.
Now, how many of these shrines are there throughout the country? Are we talking hundreds or thousands?
Tens of thousands, actually.
Wow.
Nobody knows how many there are. They've been there for centuries. Oftentimes they aren't really sure who is supposed to be enshrined there. Like, is it a person? Was it like some ancient figure or God. It's usually just something that people have been keeping there and repairing, and you know, they it's made of wood and they rebuild it every century or so. And there's just, you know, everywhere you go in Japan, you walk down the street, you'll see like a little shrine here, a little one there. You know, in a community, there's going to be a big one with an entrance, and that's where the local people will go to, you know, to give thanks for prosperity or you know, pray to find love or something like that. And there's just a countless number of experiences you can have in Japan.
So, now, is this mostly found in the city areas, or do you also find these in the country?
I think there are actually more of them in the countryside, because in the cities, they don't like to move them, but, you know, they build so many tall buildings that they often have to, like, you know, hide them, you know, like, in an alleyway or, like, on the top of a building or something like that. So they're usually harder to find in the cities, although there's still plenty. They're still all over the place, but definitely in the countryside, you'll be seeing more of them.
Wow,
such a different
and what
culture.
Is this,
go ahead.
What is this connection with Armageddon? I read in the book with Armageddon.
Where was that exactly? The modern prophecy of apocalypse. That's something, you know, when I wrote this about a year ago, I had only just started looking into that. That's what my friend Mr. Nakaya is, you know, he's the authority on that document. It's a very interesting thing. It's a channeled text. It says it's from like high level, like angels or divinities are the authors, and what it says is that, like, you know, the current, you know, our current civilization, our technological civilization is unsustainable, and like it's on its way to collapse. And there's these authorities that they give the name, like, something like Japanese word for Masons, but, you know, like the people in power are manipulating people to you know, cause this to happen. And so for the spiritual people in the world, there's this like difficult path that's coming up, where there's going to be a big battle of, you know, the anti forces versus the spiritual forces. And in that battle, it talks about Japan. It says it's a message for Japanese people, but this is the interesting thing: that document, when it talks about Japan, it isn't talking about the physical country. It's talking about like a group of like spiritually allied people. So even if you were born in another country, you can be Japanese in the sense that book is talking about.
Right.
And or like even if you're born in Japan, you can like be like confused and allied with the other forces. I think that's that's something that I had never heard of before. But Mr. Naka is really big on that, and I'm hoping that this year or next year I can start looking into that with him and telling that story, because I'm sure there's all sorts of stuff out there that is just going to be amazing.
Yes, absolutely. That was interesting. I was like, wow. You know, and also, again, the angelic realm. And I mean, that connects. I mean, they've been here with us since the beginning of time. So, you know, that connects too, still. It's, you know, messages through them and that, and talking about that was pretty interesting. I was surprised to see that in there.
Yeah, I'm, you know, the first thing I was looking at were these parahistories, right? But the parahistories, that document, it mentions some of them multiple times, which is how I was able to link it in like that. You know, that document, it seems to support the idea of this you know, ancient spiritual civilization, which is in contrast to our modern world. And
right.
So hopefully I'll be able to build on what I've started to uncover here and expand on that into this angelic message.
That's going to be interesting. Wow.
Is that going to be your next book, Avery?
Well, I don't want to say anything yet, right? You don't want to jinx it. But I'm really hoping that I can work with Mr. Nakaya, and he can teach me everything that he knows about this, because, you know, this book was all my independent research. I was just stuck with my nose in the book at the library for several months looking into all this stuff. But it will be great to have an actual teacher, like a Japanese guy who knows about these things, and he'll be able to direct me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they might be able to create some type of an introduction for you to meet the people who have some of these other manuscripts that haven't been turned over yet.
Yeah, that's another thing that I'm hoping, is that I can uncover some of these things which aren't available yet. So I'm really hoping that I'm just getting started here.
Yeah, because you mentioned tens of thousands of these shrines that who
right.
knows? I mean, there could be all kinds of ancient documents, you know, hidden away in the pottery jars of these shrines.
Right. And it's surprising that with the Hotsumatsu Tai thing, the one that has that chart there, they,
yes.
you know, the first thing they had was just a copy that someone had made of it. And that was all they had for like 40 years. And they were asking everyone, please check your local shrine. You know, look in the house where the old documents are, see if there's anything like this. And after 40 years, they finally found an older copy. So that I think that really shows that this is really unexplored. And there must be all sorts of things out there that, you know, because they're suppressed, because people aren't interested, they just haven't looked into it yet.
What a loss. Well, again, thank goodness you're bringing this all back so that we can benefit from your research and, more importantly, that we can reconnect. I mean, this is an opportunity for all of us to reconnect with our ancient sources and our ancient history, the true ancient history, not some manufactured thing that's been contrived by government or religion or whomever's in power that thinks they should have power over us instead of power mm-hmm. with us. So mm-hmm. it's created a tremendous imbalance, which is leading us to the edge of Armageddon. So it's nice to have information like this where we can, again, feel that connection, most importantly, and understand where we come from.
Mm-hmm. What was your favorite thing you wrote about?
Ooh, that's got to be a tough one. You know,
yeah.
in the last document that I talked about, the one with the Eightfold Script, I was reading this book about it by a Japanese person, and that person kept on mentioning, like, you know, scientific research I had never heard of. Like, there's someone who said that, like, organic life can be, like, created. What was that? That energy can be created by organic matter, like instead of just, you know, being dissolved, which is the way science usually explains it, is that like life forms just eat up the energy. But there's this researcher who said energy can be created, and no one really looked at what he was doing. They just kind of pushed it away. And, like, you know, it was a French guy, but I ended up first reading about it in a Japanese book. And I think that just shows, like, you know, how much everything, you know, everything we need to know is all out there. We just haven't been able to gather it together yet.
Yes, and find it. Well, we are organic matter, and we do create energy.
Right,
right, Patricia?
Exactly.
We certainly do.
Yes, we do. It's,
you know,
amazing
thing is,
energy.
Yes, big energy. Another thing in the book, Avery, that was you talked about was diet. What kinds of food was recommended to eat?
Oh, yes, that's right.
Can you tell us more about that?
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that. It's in one of these documents that people should refrain from eating meat because it will make their hearts and souls, like, clogged up. People aren't meant to eat this, that you should stick to, like, you know, like rice and vegetables and occasional fish. And that, like, that was a real surprise to me, because that's also in that angelic manuscript that Mr. Nakaya told me about. Vegetarianism is very rare in Japan. They usually don't even know what you're talking about. If you say,
really?
Like, I want, yeah, like, you can go to a Japanese restaurant and say, can I have a vegetarian salad? And they'll give you the salad with, like, fish flakes on top for taste.
Oh, my goodness.
They just think, yeah, like, they think vegetarian means, like, you know, a style of cooking, like Chinese food or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's something my friends in the countryside had to deal with, because they often had diets, but they don't understand the idea of a restrictive diet out there. But actually, in my friend Mr. Nakaya, he has somehow kept vegetarian for 30 years after learning about this angelic manuscript, which says that you shouldn't eat animals. And he says that it's kept him, like, really healthy in Japan, like, even living in the city with all of the pollution and stuff. So I think that's, you know, that's something that's definitely unexpected coming from Japanese documents, from that culture where they have no familiarity with that. And that's something I would really like to hear more about. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more too, because, I mean, I believe beef and poultry are big staples in the Japanese diet, right?
Well,
today?
It didn't used to be that way. Like, you know, they imported Western food when they were building up their civilization to rival the European civilization. And that's when they started eating all of the beef and poultry. But before that, you know, they're an island country. They didn't have a lot of room for those things. They were mostly just eating, you know, rice and seaweed and veggies and some fish. That's the diet of the people who built up the country.
Wow. And I was wondering, too, you know, in this manuscript, if this was a diet that was recommended just for the Japanese people, or is this for all people?
Right. I feel like it's based in something that looks a lot like alchemy. Like, you know, like, animals have these elements in them, plants have these elements, human beings have all five elements, and we need to balance them by eating the right things. So I think that that's not just for Japanese people, but that's really a message for all people in that way.
So it's basically fish and vegetables and some rice, and that's it.
Yeah, and actually that became popular in America for a little while. It's called the macrobiotic diet, where you're eating a lot of those greens, like stuff that they ate in medieval times in Japan, and you eat brown rice, which has more nutrients in it. I have some friends who keep that diet, and they seem like very, very healthy people.
Well, that's good.
As for me, I have to eat whatever's in the dining hall, so I haven't kept
you
that
can't
idea.
Follow it.
Oh, you
no.
poor thing.
Yeah.
Oh.
So you have institutional food you have to contend with. That's a nightmare. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Can't you tell them it's against your religion and have them make you something special?
There you go.
I do have a friend who keeps kosher, and he's been making Japanese food because most of it is somehow kosher. So I sometimes eat with him, and that's a real relief.
It's got to be.
Wow, that
is
kosher, huh?
Mm-hmm,
that too would go back to Jewish food being kosher.
Right, yeah.
There's the connection again.
Right,
wow.
It's interesting. Like, he can't eat most of what's at the grocery store, but when he makes some rice balls, some, you know, miso soup, the salty soup, or he puts some fish and things, that's all follows the Jewish laws as well.
Oh, that's great. That is so great.
Huh.
My goodness. Well, yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of things about the foods that we eat having an effect on our consciousness and the pollution within our body, and it's a definite question in my mind, because I know for the colder climates where I live, for example, I can't imagine not being able to eat some meat, because
right.
it's what keeps you warm. I mean, I just can't imagine being able to survive the bitter winter, especially the last one we just had, with just a little bit of fish and some vegetables. I wish I could feel comfortable with that, but I don't. So.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm also used to colder climates, and I feel like red meat seems to provide, you know, like the protein that I really want. But for my friend who grew up here in Santa Fe, he apparently was able to adapt to the Japanese diet. He's a good role model for me.
He certainly is, I guess, for all of us. Yeah, but it is. I know we've had Native American people, elders, and medicine men on the show, and they have talked about that in order to stay warm, you have to have this or that in your diet. They do mention fish, you know, as a good staple, but and they don't recommend necessarily poultry as a way of staying warm. But red meat is definitely on their list. So, again, that's why I wondered if this part of the manuscript was just for people in that part of the world or if it was for all people, because certainly the climates are vastly different, the needs are vastly different in other parts of the world. And isn't Japan more of a temperate climate?
It ranges from like really snowy up north on those northern islands to down where I was living back last year, that it was like subtropical. So,
oh my, how nice.
Yeah, there seems to, you know, I feel there actually are a lot of like local foods that match the climate. They had a special kind of tofu in the village I was from, and that was good on a hot summer day. But yeah, I feel like it is true that, you know, people's diets, they have to vary depending on what resources they have access to. And my friend Mr. Nakia was recently talking about the vegetarian diet in his, like, you know, in angelic manuscript, and he said, is this for all people, or is it just, you know, is it just for the leaders of our community are supposed to keep the special rules? And I feel like it's an open question, definitely.
Fascinating. Very fascinating.
Yeah.
All of this is, my goodness. So you're not going to reveal your next book yet. Okay, that's all right. You like that.
You tried, Patricia.
We did try, but you got to promise us to come back on the show when it's available.
All right. That sounds like a plan.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just great. I mean, it's given us a lot of insight to the Japanese culture, but also to a culture that predates, I think, Japan, because as I'm looking at, again, your fabulous chart that you have revealed to the world through your book, I'm seeing that, you know, this is before there were actual, well, I know, Becky, you mentioned the five races, but it's almost like it was before that time. It was that ancient connection is extremely powerful, and it really resonates with me. And your book is opening a big door for everybody to take a look at that and understand their own ancient connection that predates the time when we had lots of different types of people, races, whatever you want to call it, where we were all more connected and we knew we came from the cosmos. I mean, there was that connection that was so profound that we've lost. And all these other people have moved in to take its place.
Mm. It's really all about that single source. That's what I discovered when I was looking at these things. That they might be about different topics, but they're all very firm on a single world tradition from before we were all divided.
Mm.
That's right.
I mean,
so let's get back to this point of origin here. I think it would be a lot better for the planet and all of us if we could do that.
Yeah, definitely.
So tell us, is there anything else that you can share with us about what you learned and what you've integrated to your life from doing this research?
Mm.
Wow, that's a big question. I feel like, you know, this is really directed my life, finding out about these things, and it's opened up a world for me of this Shinto, like, you know, a Japanese tradition that people don't really know about, like even in Japan. Like we started out by saying, these are suppressed documents. They get lost. They were rediscovered by small groups of people. But I feel like, you know, I'm really interested in learning about what's happened recently. But definitely that angelic manuscript, that might be the focus of what I do in the future. I feel like this is giving me some direction with what I want to learn about, you know, and what I want to practice in my life too.
Well, you are clearly following. I'm sorry,
yes.
Go ahead, Becky.
I do like that direction because that will open up so much. It's already connected to manuscripts, to your book, and you go further with that, it will open up a whole new understanding. And I mean, even to work with someone who really does understand it quite a bit, I mean, that would be a fabulous book.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I'm just crossing my fingers, hoping that, you know, I'll be able to talk with them more, meet them in person, and really really develop this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we hope that for you too, because you are certainly following your original instructions. You're doing what you came here to do, which is a great thing. I mean, a lot of people get lost along the way, but you found your path, and it's really opened up a big door. And again, for everybody out there, you need to get on Amazon.com right now and order this book, The Sacred Science of Ancient Japan, Lost Chronicles of the Age of the Gods, if for nothing else than to gaze upon this diagram that's in this book. I'm telling you what, I have not seen anything that powerful ever. It's an amazing chart. So, but Avery, thank you so much. This has been just a wonderful way to spend our Saturday show is with you. It's been a real privilege to talk with you about all of this.
It's been great to talk with you too. I'm just thinking back. You've given me, you know, this whole new perspective on things. You said that this eightfold script it's appeared before, and you know, I'm feeling a lot more. You know, I'm feeling really connected with this thing. Thank you so much.
Oh,
you're welcome.
You're welcome, and it's our pleasure. So please keep us posted, will you, on your research and what you uncover and your next book, and we'll be sure to stay in touch with you and our listeners about the diagram and whatever we find. We'll be happy to share with everybody.
Great. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and good luck with your next phase of your work, Avery. Thank you.
All right.
So, Becky, you, I know, have a message for someone this evening.
Yes, I do. The message is for Randall. Randall, this is your message. Dawn holds your answer. Reread the third chapter. Awake. Koshohara ik. Randall, we are with you. And there's your message, Randall. I'd love to hear from you. Write to Supernatural Girls and let me know what happens. Thank you. There we go, Patricia.
Wow, that was great. I had chills when you were just stating the angelic prayer.
Yeah, it was,
you were stating it. It was beautiful.
Very spiritual, this one. Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, I hope he was listening, or if it's the person who was listening that can get this to Randall. That was a great message. And everybody knows, our shows are archived. So if you missed part of it this evening, or if you would like one of your friends to hear the show, you can go right to SupernaturalGirls.com and listen to any of our archive shows anytime it's convenient for you.
Absolutely.
So next week, Becky, I think we're going to be talking with someone from Peru about ayahuasca. So it's going to be another exciting show.
Oh, yes.
I can't wait to hear about
this.
Yeah.
We have had fascinating guests, haven't we?
The best. Our guests are the best. No question about it. We're very, very lucky to be able to talk to these people from all over the world. It's great. So,
absolutely.
All right. Well, we're wrapping up another exciting show. And, again, please make sure you subscribe to the newsletter so you can keep up with all the events and news and everything that we're doing. It's so exciting. Don't miss out. SupernaturalGirls.com. Go sign up if you haven't already.
That's right. Good night, Patricia.
Well, good night, Becky. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for another radio adventure with Supernatural.